Good morning, good evening, good afternoon for those of you who are watching maybe the replay later. Hi, my name is Vivian Acqua and I'm a certified diversity executive. And today I have a special guest here on the other side of StreamYard, and that's Marlena Lekoning. So Marlena is a director for PwC, where she leads a team of HR tech and data specialists who help clients drive workforce transformation and create data-driven strategies and implement innovative technologies. But she's also the author of HR Tech Strategy: Revolutionizing Employee Experience Through HR Tech Synergy. And I have a side note to share. She also interviewed me for regarding the virtual reality experience, so amplify empathy with virtual reality, and I'm excited to interview her for this show. So let's start with the first question, Malena. Why do we need to humanize the workplace?
I think we spend a lot of time at work, so work needs to be great. I always reference to work as a playground for adults. So also when I sit down with my children at the end of the day and I ask them how their day at school was, I will always tell about my experience and my playground. And if you think about the concept of the playground, and that's why I also like it, you learn, you experiment, you innovate, but you also collaborate with other people. So that's really important for me. And you do that all together. And then also, I think one of the beauties why I like the reference and analogy with the playground is that you can fall down, because that happens on the playground. And we all make mistakes all out through the day. And we have our expertise and we're learning, and learning is also growing. But the fun part is, if we have a humanized workplace, if we fall, we pick each other up and we start playing again, and we learn and we grow. And I think that's, for me, very important. If you think about being human in the workplace, is doing it together to reach a goal and a purpose that you stand for as a team or consecutively.
Love what you're sharing, and also the reference. I've never seen the workplace as a playground, and I hope that those who are watching this episode or listening to this episode try to see the workplace as a playground, where indeed Marlena shares that you can fall, but also your team members are there to support you, and from there on you can apply your growth mindset, right? Because that's what you're practically saying with the playground aspect. And you have written a book, I think, around last year, this time, or maybe a few months later. You told a dear friend of mine, Mary Jane Royd, who also told me about your book initiative as well. What made you decide to write this book?
Before I joined PwC, I worked at Microsoft in the product engineering team, and we worked on a lot of revolutionizing technologies, and I talked with many clients about that. And that made me also do some keynotes and sessions around the future of the workplace, and not the future. And of course, due to the COVID pandemic, for a lot of organizations, it's accelerated in the hybrid work. But we also looked in the future, like, how do we work a decade from now? What is the future of work going to mean in terms of how humans collaborate with technology? And if you envision it, what would could the future be? So I talked a lot about that. And then because it's a niche subject, because it's mainly, I look at HR and technology and data. So the intersection, really, what does it mean for people and for the workplace? So we look a lot at it from a technology and a product development standpoint, but not necessarily on the impact of people. I got approached basically by a publisher, and I started talking about what we could do to publish it. So that sparked my interest in doing this. And I think it's also interesting because it can be an inspiration for organizations, but it can also help in taking really the first step, and also share that it's not that scary to start implementing technology and data within your strategies as an organization. But it's good that you make strategic choices about it, and that it's fun and interesting for organizations to do so. But I didn't want to make it an academic book with only research, and I wanted to make it practical. So I thought, what do I like the most when I'm reading it? Things, it's examples, right? So what do other companies do? What do, because then you can learn from peer-to-peer connections. And so how do you translate a research into a practicality and into a reality? And that's why I thought about interviewing a lot of companies and include a few cases per chapter to just share a light on what is happening and what do other companies do with it. And that's also when you and I started to talk a bit on how you help your clients with this and how you are putting this into practice.
Yes, definitely. I really like what you share regarding the readability about the book, because oftentimes, especially when it comes to tech, it's not always written for everybody, right? The book is very light. It's readable. And indeed, with all the different examples that you share, you have definitely inspired me from different aspects, and the aspects we will discuss later. But also one of the things that you mentioned is tech, HR, all the new things that people need to adopt to, which brings me to this question, right? Why might the HR industry be hesitant to adopt new technologies and innovate? Because you write a part in this in your book about this, but I'm curious into why you share this part.
Well, I don't think the hesitation is the biggest part, but it's, HR is not always a front runner, right? So if you think about new technologies being developed, they're being developed for different type of strategic reasons within organizations, and their development for faster growth, for acceleration, and not always with the people in mind. But if you now think about Gen AI, for example, and how fast this has democratized and being used by everybody in their private life, even if work is forbidding it, people are using it. It's taking a fast pace. But then what does that mean for the people in your organization? What does that mean for how people work and interact together? And that's something where I think that HR should be in the front seat, and also the effect that it requires. Because as an organization, if you are adopting more AI within your organization, what does it mean for the skills that the people have within your organization? Are they digital literate enough to work with all the technologies that we implement at a fast pace within our organizations? Do we have the adoption and change management programs in place to really enable it, that we also get the intended results from it, because we learn and we give people the skills to work with these technologies? So that's one thing where I think that HR should be in the driver's seat. And then the other part is, we talk about talent shortages all the time. So many industries, organizations, they struggle with having enough people to do the work now or in the future. Mm-hmm. They don't have the right skills, or they need different things to stay on top of their market. So do we think about it when we do our strategic workforce planning? Do we look into the skills that we have now that we need in the future, but also how we can work hand in hand with technology? Because maybe you don't need a full-time Marlena anymore, but only a part-time, because I can do my work together with technology or with AI. So that affects our workforce planning and how we design our organization. So for me, I think HR should also be leading in this in terms of organizational design, from humans collaborating with technology and how that brings success to an organization.
Okay, I'm going to bring a challenge, because HR is often the scapegoat when it comes to people, right? And HR's palette is already, it's already full. How would you see the decision and also HR leading in this? Would that be needed in an extra role? Or who do you see, who within the HR line do you see would be responsible for the initiatives regarding HR tech?
So, well, I think there are different levels of HR tech, right? You have the vendor selection and really deciding, are we going to build, buy, or borrow? So that those are collaboration with IT specialists within the organization. And that's not something necessarily that I think that HR should lead. But I think there should be a synergy more with these levels. And then if you think about the strategic objectives that an organization is driving, HR, in my view, should be in the should be joining those discussions from this human-centric approach. So if you think about the employees in your organization, sometimes it happens that organizations decide to implement a technology or to change their strategy, which means that people are required to work differently. But if we don't think about the effect on the change approach, things will fail. I mean, there have been numerous of reports for the past decades that a lot of digital transformation or change or digital transformation or other transformation affect projects or changes done by the organization failed. And they failed because humans didn't go along, because the change management didn't work. So my view is, if you bring that up front and created HR IT synergy, as I called it, so thinking about what are all the new AIs, all the new technologies that we're going to implement, and what is the effect? So how do we bring then our workforce along? And that should be a CHRO play, to think about the strategy and the effect of the organization. And then it trickles down to who is going to execute on it. And that's a different conversation.
Thank you for elaborating on that. But previously, you also talked about the skills gap, right? I do have to say that I find it a bit challenging, that aspect, because when I look at vacancies right now, oftentimes they don't go for the skills. They go for the degrees. They go for all the external things, which are also relevant, but should not be relevant when you want to create, when you want to fill that gap that a lot of companies are having right now when it comes to talent. So what can companies do to prepare candidates entering the workforce to better address the existing skills gap?
I think there are a few things happening in the market, right? And not all organizations have changed, so there are still many organizations that are doing more traditional career pathing based on degrees, and but you see many companies now letting that go as well, and that will trickle down to the skills required. And also companies are realizing more and more that they don't have the right skills. So there are three skills, I think, that now are being, or that I also mentioned in my book, that are very important around this. So one is really the digital literacy, right? With all the changes that are going on with technology, we need to regardless of your industry almost, and regardless of your jobs, and some jobs are affected more than others. So at PwC, we also do some research about that, and we share about what industries are more exposed to AI than others. But within all those industries and in all those jobs, digital literacy and being able to work with those technologies becoming a skill that is needed. You have the human skills, right? Some skills cannot be replaced by AI. So those are also becoming more prominent, because when you cannot automate or augment that in an in a person, then the person needs to do that. So critical thinking becomes important, and also questioning the technology, right? And that also goes to the critical thinking. Are we doing the right things? And then for me, one of the other things that I mentioned that I think is really, really important is that we all think about the ethical skills that we have within the organization. Because when we are democratizing data and technology within the organization, do we ask the right questions? Are we doing the right thing? Is the data significant enough to draw a conclusion? Did we have enough diversity in the data set to begin with? So there are a lot of things that you want to question when you're also implementing these technologies. So that's why I think that ethical skills are more and more important. And then what organizations can do, I think, is to help their employees to be more resilient. So to really work on that, it's not going to be a fixed 10 years time you're going to be in this job. But you need to develop, you already mentioned the growth mindset, right? So we need to grow collectively. And then what I sometimes mentor people or do sessions, and then I always encourage them to work on both their soft and hard skills, because I think they're both more important regardless in the job that you are in. But as an organization, you can also be, for your current employee base, but also for your potential future employee base, be very transparent in what you're going to. So what is our organizational strategy, and what type of people do we then need in order to get there? And that also helps for internal mobility, because if you know that your job might become redundant in the next 3 years, but other jobs where you potentially have a 60% skills match on will become bigger, then if you develop in those 3 years the 20% skills, so you land on an 80% skills gap, would you then be able to internally move within the organization? And the beauty of the technology is that with if you have the right data, you can address those gaps, and then you can make those plans and help your employee base to grow towards those positions. And then the ones that you cannot find internally or cannot help and pivot their careers internally, then you can look for those externally.
Like what you said about not staying in your role for 10 years, because that used to be the case in the past. But what would you say, what should the expiration date be for a job role, let's say mid or senior position? And also it connects also to the internal job rotation, right? So what should be, what is your answer regarding that?
I don't know if you can put a date on it, but I think even if you do the same role for 30 years, the role is not the same. So if you think about people who started in a certain role 30 years ago, they worked with a fax machine. They don't know, I hope. So they
Google it. For the people that don't know what a fax machine is, Google it.
It's something people used back in the day, but that changed, right? So the
Yeah,
entire
true.
role changed over time. And if you think about all the roles that we're having now, they will change over time, and that can be due to rules and regulations. Because even in, if you think about, for example, the health industry, right? There's also more rules and regulations which change jobs. Now with AI, it changes a lot of jobs, especially if you think about the knowledge workers that are behind the desk. So thinking about a decade or 2 decades from now, but also how we learn and develop, right? And also the values we have in the workplace are changing from generation to generation. So even if you were, I don't know, a lawyer 10 years ago, and you will be a lawyer a decade from now, I don't think it's the same job. So, and then next to that, I think people will change more fastly from a difference in careers.
Yeah, definitely. In your book, you talk about, I chuckle with this word when I notice the productivity paranoia. So I am curious about the definition, how you came to that, and also its impact on workplace dynamics, especially in a hybrid environment.
So first of all, it's not my definition. It was coined by Microsoft CEO Satya Nadella. So this is where you can see that I work for Microsoft and I'm entirely branded in the Microsoft spirit. But it is a phenomenon that we found, especially during that accelerated in the COVID-19 pandemic, where leaders think or thought that their employees were not productive, where employees think they are productive, and in many cases they even felt burned out. So what you saw rising when we started to work more hybrid and more remote is that people experience that they need to be always on and 24/7 visible, otherwise to overcompensate to not see their manager or not be in the office, where sometimes leaders thought that people were just, I don't know, Netflixing all day and not doing anything. So there was a, and this is generalizing, but there was a huge disconnect in and that's also because expectations were not communicated and set, because there was no real governance in how do we collaborate, how do we work hybrid, and what are communication styles, how do we now work. And especially for teams that were used to work full in office together and now went to the hybrid or remote situation, they experienced that as a difficulty. So we need to think about more as organizations and employees, how do we measure, how do we perceive productivity, to align a bit more and to move away from the disconnect. So do we measure it more on output, such as hours work or tasks completed, or I don't know, sales generated, or more on the outcome, right? What did we do around problem solving, customer satisfaction? So if there's no agreement or real alignment on what productivity means and how it's shown, it can bring a lot of unease and stress on the employee, but also a
And
lot of the
also
team.
distrust, also a lot of distrust, because the moment that a manager or the company is demanding people to work from the office, which happened after the COVID style, right? After the lockdown, it's causing distrust for people to really rethink about, do I want to work here, or is there a competitor that is offering something different as well?
Yeah, and then you go into different type of working styles and agreements, right? So what I also talk about in the book is about you have the employee privilege. So as an employee, you have needs and wants and values, but you also have those as a team, right? And then you also have team goals because as a team, you're there for a reason. You want to achieve something collectively as a team. So how do I then align my personal preferences and personal values with that from a team? And then how does that fit within the organization? And what are the boundaries also that from a procedures or governance or legal perspective that you as an organization need to play with? And how do we facilitate? And then what I look into are basically five stages of hybrid work. So where you basically have no guidelines, no governments, and also no technology to facilitate employees up till what Microsoft also facilitated a lot, which we called was asynchronous work. And that's where you really can, where you really have found an optimum between the employee privileges, the team values, and the organizational boundaries. And people can put their best work in at the best time because you've reached those agreements on output or outcomes within the organization. And people can do that in alignment to reach that, taking all these values into account.
There is a part in your book where you talk about well-being, and this question came to mind. So, how can organizations create an environment that supports uninterrupted focus time for their employees?
That's super important, first of all. So I like that you take that out of the book and the questions. I think if you look back, I don't know, even 5 or 10 years and now, there's so much coming in our way. All those notifications, WhatsApps, social media notifications, everything is being notified. So that's distracting us. And if you don't have this, if you're not or if you're distracted, there's a lot of neuroscience saying that then you cannot focus and then you don't get into the flow, what they call, right? Where you get into the creativity or you're just more on the execution side instead of the innovation, the exploration, examination. So we need that focus time in order to be doing our job well. But it's super hard if we go from meeting to meeting with no time in between because we're used to a 30-minute meeting and then hang up and dial in again. Well, if you are in an office and need to walk to a meeting room, you're already late. So we are distracting ourselves continuously by emails, meetings, and notifications. So that's a problem, and what we like to call collaboration overload, right? We're collaborating so much that we don't get stuff done. So what you can do as an organization is create insights into what are the meeting and collaboration habits that we have in an organization. There's one fun story that I always like to tell from an organization. It was a use case we used in Microsoft, is where we looked into how are people meeting, and then we call it the $30 million meeting because executives were meeting on a weekly basis. But then they ask a question to their direct reports, who connected to each other and talked about it, and then they talk to their direct reports and they communicated with each other and in team meetings, and then they communicated to their direct reports. Well, in the end, it resulted into 300,000 hours a year only to prepare for that meeting in an organization, which can be solved by creating dashboards or doing things differently or by communicating clearly that you don't need it up to the detail, the answer for everything. So if it's directionally correct and you save half of the hours or 20% even, that it saves the organization a lot of time. But we don't know what we are doing. So we don't have our meeting habits and our collaboration habits set straight. So what I like, and there are a few organizations that I also interviewed on what they're doing, and they have different type of meeting habit sets and different type of communication habit sets to allow people to have at least 2 hours a day to focus on things. And then what I also liked in Microsoft is that we experimented with no meeting days with our clients. So we did, what is the effect on productivity if you have one day a week that you're not meeting at all? Or if you do no meeting mornings or no meeting afternoons as a team, how much is the productivity then going up and down? And that's the fun thing. And also with my current team, that's something that you can measure easily. So if you just have the right tools in place and as an organization, if you know, then you can act on what the problem is. And the same goes for people who are working in the weekends and after hours. And then what I like the most is to tie that analysis to well-being, right? So if you think about that we are stressed, and if you look at engagement surveys or annual surveys or biannual that organizations do on how are people feeling at work, how engaged are, then oftentimes there's a certain percentage in an organization that says, I feel overworked. I feel overwhelmed. I'm super stressed. But we never know what the differentiating factor is between those people and others, where technology and data analysis allows you to look into, okay, so what do these people do differently? And sometimes you see that they meet less with their manager, so they don't have a sight or an idea of the impact of their work, or they have a smaller network. Or so it can be different things than only working overtime or after hours. So if you know what it is, or they might have like four project deadlines and processes in the same month where the rest of the year they're not doing anything, right? Well, they probably are doing something, but like that you only peak at one moment or multiple moments. So how can you then as an organization redefine the work so you don't have everything at one peak, but for example, spread it more throughout the year? And if you understand that, so that's different than the interventions we take around extra vacation days or all a different type of well-being measurements. It's also about throughout the entire workday, how can we then measure and understand what are the behaviors that drive stress to people, and what type of meetings are people getting stressed from, and how can we then change it as an organization? Does it answer your question?
No. I love it. It reminded me of, you know, the quote for it. This meeting could have been an email, right? Oftentimes people are being kidnapped in a meeting whilst this could have been, you know, communicated via email or summarized via email. And also the other thing is I know companies out there that block 1 hour, but they cap off their meeting time at 45 minutes so that people have at least 15 minutes to rest before they go into another meeting. And there should be a max when it comes to meetings as well. There should be a max. So I really like that what you explained about that meeting, because oftentimes this is killing the productivity in a huge way. Thank you. Let me see what I can ask more. In the book, you talk about the employee life cycle, and I was curious about what role does technology play in enhancing inclusivity and fairness throughout the whole cycle.
I can talk about this an entire day alone.
it's a tip to buy the book, read the book, and also for those who have questions, please share them in the chat so that I can ask them as well. But it's definitely an insight to read the book, right?
Yeah, I think if you think about the employee life cycle, you go from from candidate experience, so from employee branding to the recruitment process to offboarding, and then the work in between where you want people to thrive, right? And there are many measurements that you can do. So one easy one that now also with the new European legislation is becoming more prominent for organizations is, for example, equal pay analysis or equal. So that allows you to understand if you're paying your the people within your organization equally, or if there's a minority group, for example, within the organization that is not being paid fairly. And then you can also look at equal, not only at equal pay, but equal opportunity. But if you take it a little bit more upfront when hiring people, or when having the candidate journey, right, there's technologies that can help you write more inclusive vacancies. And that's not because we, different type of people with different type of backgrounds react different to words. So what type of wording is more in line with a certain type of groups. And it doesn't only go for gender, but also, for example, between if you have a university level degree or a what we in Dutch call MBO or college degree, right? So there or practical degree, there are all different types of levels and how people respond. So sometimes there, if you write a very academic vacancy, but you need a hands-on person, then you might have a mismatch. So that's also where AI and technology can help you in writing that vacancy, but then also in fairness, in understanding, do we actually have a fair selection procedure? And there are all kinds of technologies that can help you with that. And then one that I love is also for learning and for learning purposes. So where AI now can help you with your tone of voice and with your gestures and how you approach different type of groups and make managers better in delivering feedback or in delivering conversations. And I think we all can improve a little bit there. I think everybody can remember, and if not, then you have had a great career, but you had a feedback moment with one of your managers that weren't great, or where you're thinking like, why is he or she talking to me in that way? Well, that can be prevented if you are made aware on how you're talking and also about understanding it more. So I like also what you are doing, right? Is through virtual reality, understand how are people behaving within their organization and how does that message land with different type of groups. And it's oftentimes it's unintentional, but there's a lot to be improved. And then also another thing, I think managers have a huge impact on their direct reports without always understanding this. So one case that I mentioned in my book as well is the effect when you hire a male person in your team and a female person in your team. Sometimes managers spend more time with their males, and they don't think so. And it's oftentimes only a matter of 10 minutes a week or something. But it actually oftentimes has an effect on the network that are people building. And the network you have has an effect on the visibility you have. And the visibility has an effect on the projects you're invited to work on or other things or on promotion cycle. So that means in the first 6 months or so, if you spend more time with certain people you hire than with others, that might have an effect on their entire career. And that's not intentional, but we don't know. And I think through data and technology, you can understand more what is happening. Are we creating the same opportunities and visibility within the organization for these different type of groups? Because that can help you to be more fair in the decision making.
I want to go to, because you mentioned something about the virtual reality, but I'm always curious, I'm also curious about you combining virtual reality and augmented reality technologies for making learning and developing more inclusive. Can you share a little bit more about that?
Well, I think also there are many reasons why virtual makes it more inclusive for different type of people, right? Also, if you think about more physically impaired, so hearing impaired or anything, right? And virtual or augmented reality can also be a huge detriment in helping people learn and develop. But I think again, it goes to there are multiple cases on how you can use this, and you create more opportunity for learning for everybody. So I think that's one thing. If there is a virtual opportunity that's available for everybody, you don't invest only in a certain percentage or in a certain type within your organization, but you democratize learning more within your organization. So that could be already something to create more equal learning opportunities within the organization. And then the other thing is what I just mentioned is those cases where you can really learn and grow as a human through AI. So through those feedback moments, through understanding how your behavior reflects on others, that can really make you a better human being to your employees and also more inclusive. And we don't always realize that I might have a different tone of voice to you than to your. I'm not doing that on purpose, but I am doing it. And I'm saying things with a different type of intonation. I might use different type of words. And I do that all maybe even unaware, but I am doing it. And that means that sometimes there's so much unconscious bias that we are not realizing that AI can help us. So if you say that you're practicing on a certain type of group versus another group, and you can, and the AI can give you the feedback on how you are talking, then it can help you as a human to become aware of your own biases and then act on those.
While you were saying that, I know that AI, I know that sales departments are using AI to practice their way of pitching, right? To practice the way of connecting with clients. So I can see how this can also be of value for managers to practice their leadership skills, how they are interacting with each other. So that's, thank you for that aspect. I would love to have a learn more about people analytics, and let me look up the question. In what areas can people analytics have the most significant impact on improving business performance? But first, can you share a little bit about what is people analytics before you answer this question?
Yeah, people analytics is basically, well, it's evidence-based, data-driven decision based on the data of your workforce or of the people within your organization. So there's, like, within finance and marketing analytics, that has been a long time already that companies do analysis, but now since we have bought more technology around our people, we also have more data around our people, right? Where before we, and even when we keep it in Excel, so we capture data around our people from how many CVs we receive or how many people we have employed to the salaries. Like, we keep all kinds of data around our people, but with the more data that we have, we can also create more insights in the organization. And then there are a few ways to approach it. You can think about it from a strategic decision making. So where are we going as an organization? And then what data of our people do we need in order to help us? And in the beginning of our conversation, I already talked about skills and what type of skills we need in the future, right? That's also a type of analysis that you can do, and that can be done by the people analytics team. Or, but another case, if you tie it back to the conversation that we also had.
I hope that Marlena will, yes, she's coming back. I don't know what happened, it doesn't matter. We can continue the conversation.
Did I go, oh.
Yeah, so... you went offline a little bit.
Oh, sorry, I didn't notice. what did I share about people analytics?
You were explaining what people analytics is, and then you can now go on to the answering the question, in what areas can people analytics have the most significant impact on improving business performance?
Yeah, so you can do it from within the skills example that we talked about earlier, that's also an example, right? It can improve the business and where you can leverage people data into doing that. Another one, if you think about the topic of well-being that we also discussed in psychological safety, you can also have to work with your people analytics team in doing those analysis to understand better where's the well-being coming from within the team. But you can also predict sick leave, for example. So you can prevent that from a long-term, so you can potentially prevent long-term sick leave, but you can also think about it for your planning purposes, right? So if you think about the organizational effectiveness, if you are, I don't know, working in childcare, for example, if then people are sick, then you cannot close the daycare for that day. So you need to have the right people, or if you think about hospitals or these type of things. So you want to be able to predict who's going to show up or not, and then also adjust your planning on it, because otherwise you need to hire a lot of last minute people to work for the company. So that's where people analytics can also drive a lot of value within the organization. Well, I mentioned equal pay. So they're like throughout the entire life cycle of employees, there are basically all kinds of data that can help you measure these things. And the beauty is not only to do it from a use case perspective, but really think about what are our organizational goals, what is the people data that we have available, and how can those contribute us as an organization in order to get to reach our goals. And then you combine the data of multiple of those technologies that you have acquired as an organization in order to derive those results. And that's something that some organizations are already far advanced with and working on, and some organizations are starting with. But it's an interesting field because with the more data becomes available, the more we can do about it.
Definitely, definitely. And also in the book, you talk about metaverse, and I'm curious into what implications could emergence of metaverse have on HR leaders and the future of work?
Well, I think for the future of work, the metaverse can bring a lot of different types of ways that we collaborate as well. And we just touched upon the learning. So if you think about for flight pilots or for the army or firefighters, right? Oftentimes in learning and development, virtual reality or metaverse experience are already used, but that will be more and more used. And a few of the examples that I can mention that are also in my book for is one about construction, right? When we are redesigning the work in the hybrid workplace. So a lot of organizations are thinking about how does the office should look like. And within a metaverse experience, you can already walk in the office and see the changes before they're done. And that brings something that you can develop and experience on how it would look like. But it can also bring that you save in construction costs that normally you do when you're rebuilding. And another thing is, and you have a digital twin of your office, so you could potentially do onboarding. So if people are not working from your HQ, for example, you could virtually bring them in for their onboarding day and meet with your executives or do a scavenger hunt for them to understand more where you're working. But if you then translate that, for example, to manufacturing or to a plant, so you work for one of the larger FMCG companies, you might never go into the to the plant where everything is happening, but you're doing marketing communications about it. So how good is it for you to have a better understanding to enter through a virtual digital twin of that place and then learn more on how is the production process is working, how is everything going? And then the same production process can be used to train and onboard those people who are going to work in the production process. So one of the examples I gave is from a manufacturer that had 28,000 tires in waste on an annual basis because they had to stop their machine, onboard a new person. The shift leader had the best person of the take them out of the work to train people, and now they build a digital twin of the machine, so the machine never has to stop. They have less they have less waste. They can train multiple people at a time, and you can really learn everything exactly. And then if you think about redo or doing your business differently, customer care centers, oftentimes we have first, second, and third line support. What if you can upskill your first line support and have them have the a virtual replica of the product they're representing? So they don't need the third line support anymore, but the first line support with AI through large language models that can help them give the right answers, and with the metaverse experience can help them already understand what the client has experienced, see that virtually, and work with that hand in hand. And that's where humans and machines will work more and more together. It's happening now at some places. I think it will be happening more. And for HR, therefore, it's important to understand what is going on in the business, where will we build digital twins, how can we leverage those digital twins also for a employee perspective or candidate perspective and purposes within the organization, and what can we do ourselves. And then the last thing I think I want to touch on is collaboration, because we talked about the collaboration overload and not being able to get our work done. This is also something that where I think that the metaverse can help a lot. So I'm working with one company as well, and they do a lot of they create meta parks. And there you can also see, for example, all the data, all the projects that are going on within your organization, and work in those different type of rooms where different type of things are available. And I think through those experience, we will redesign how we collaborate and how we work together.
I mean, even you have a scoop to share with, you don't know the launch date yet, but can you share something about the scoop that has to do with metaverse and you?
So I'm I wrote a book, which is a real printed static or ebook, right? And I did a book launch where I invited some clients, and we handed out the printed books. But I'm actually also preparing a metaverse book launch where you can walk through an HR park and understand, and where my book comes more to life. So if you're thinking about skills passport or recruitment or technology, so how is it actually working? So people can start experiencing the book a bit more. So that's what we're developing, and we're planning a launch for somewhere around September timeframe, I would say.
Let me know. Let me know so that I can also join. Hopefully, I can join the launch this time. But I have the last question, the final question. I really love what you share regarding the book and how it's helping companies to move forward. But I'm also curious about your wish for 2030, which is almost around the corner, to humanize the workplace and HR tech strategies. What is your hope?
Well, I have multiple hopes, can I?
You can share, you can share.
Just the one. I think for organizations and for society as a whole, right? AI allows us to more productive. So what are we going to do with the extra time? Are we going to put that more into economic value, or are we going to discuss as a society and as organization that we potentially spend the time more in taking care of elderly or putting it back into society in a different type of way? I also write about that in the book, and I think that's something that, because if we create increased productivity, we can rethink on how we live and work together as humans. So I think, and that 2030 might be too soon, but I think that's definitely something where I hope that we start discussing. And then the other thing for, I think we need to take care of ourselves and our well-being, and it's becoming a more prominent role. But I would love to see organizations do for both inclusion as for well-being is to really understand what are the root causes and to start doing that data analysis so we make evidence-based decisions and not based on our gut feelings or our personal experience or anecdotal evidence, but really based on what's going on by asking different type of people and logging that through surveys or these kind of things, but also for doing more active data analysis and understanding that root cause. And then for myself, I would love to have a digital twin of myself that just like has is doing all my tasks that I am not enjoying as much. So my playground becomes even more fun.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. It was such a nice, a good conversation, also thought provoking. I really like the part where you are challenging organizations to look into inclusion and well-being as well, because there's so much more to gain on both ends, right? For the stakeholder, for all stakeholders involved. And I'm looking forward to your launch, your online digital launch as well. So thank you, Marlena. If you have any questions after watching this, type them or share them with me, and I'll make sure that it reaches Marlena as well. So thank you all, and have a good day. Bye,
Bye
everybody.
everyone, thanks.